Today is September 24th. It's about 10 to noon. I'm on the phone with Marysville activist Brian Brown. Hi, Brian.
Hi, how you doing today, Robert?
Oh, I'm, waking up slowly. How about you?
Yeah, I went and had a good breakfast today, so I'm waking up good because I got a full stomach.
Now, you and Raylan Butcher are activists who have been working with Marysville homeless folks for a number of years. How long has that been?
Oh, geez. Robert, that's been, I'd say close to 8 years or so, 8 or 9 years or so.
Mm-hmm. Now, are you two without housing yourselves or not?
Yeah, no, we're staying with your brother. We're without our own place. Yeah, we're staying with your brother right now.
So you're indoors?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we are.
And you have recently been involved in lawsuits to recover damages from properties seized by local authorities over the last few years. Is that accurate?
That's accurate.
And I guess there's a couple of lawsuits. One is for you and the personal injuries you've suffered. Another is an attempt to get an injunction to stop. Tell me if I'm wrong about this, because I'm not entirely clear. To stop this kind of behavior towards all those folks outside who, you know, have no place to go and who simply are trying to survive in tents or on the ground.
Yeah, I filed my lawsuit against the city and the county back in 2017. And I filed a class action lawsuit in 2018 for the rest of the homeless people.
Mm-hmm.
We had asked for injunctive relief, to stop their procedures and so forth, and asked for some compensatory money for the damages that they had destroyed all the property in those. So there's approximately my two lawsuits and then the class lawsuit, which is the one that's in settlement talks now. Mine's in the phase of the judge, we're waiting for the judge. He took it under submission. The city in my case against the city of Marysville has they asked for a summary judgment, so it's been under submission for almost 3 weeks now, and he hasn't came up with a decision yet. So.
And for those who don't know, a summary judgment, we mean they just dismiss it out of court without going any further, right?
Yeah.
Now, but the other lawsuit, the one that the class action lawsuit that was filed a year later, then you filed both these earlier lawsuits at the same time, both of them?
Yeah, both of my city and county, I filed them at the same time.
One was against the city, one was against the county?
That's correct.
And it was essentially for the same kind of behavior?
One was an agent and one was the principal.
What does that mean?
That means that one was the boss and the other one told the other one what to do. And the city was the agent and county was the principal, the physical destruction.
Mm-hmm. And in sort of plain terms, how much property was involved in your lawsuits and how much property is then more broadly involved in this class action lawsuit that, I should say, what kind of destruction has already happened for the people in, who are outside Marysville, and how much has already happened to you?
What happened to me, I had about $160,000 in property. And the class action, we were asking for 2.5 on the class action, kind of similar to the Kincaid versus the City of Fresno case. It almost identically related to that one, and so that's what I filed for on the class action case.
That's 2.5 million, correct?
That's correct.
Uh huh. Go ahead. So go ahead.
And so we filed that, and it got it down to $330,000, but there were some reasons why we had the class lead representatives had went ahead and agreed to the settlement. There was some stipulations that was told that just has not manifested in the settlement agreement that that our attorneys and the city of Marysville and the county made.
What were those stipulations that didn't manifest? But and then put in simple language, you mean they made some agreements that you would get certain things, and those things have not been forthcoming?
That's true. For one, it was supposed to be done on a pro bono for the class. It was supposed to be done with no money for the attorneys. It was going to be all for the homeless. And so the $330,000 was where the number came, and there was supposed to be usually a $50,000 amount awarded to an administrator for a claims administrator. Well, we're told that the $30,000 would go to us, okay, to be the administrators, because we're the best ones to be able to get the money to them, because nobody knows where these people are at. And, you know, just in the roundabout way, it's just easier to get them the money. Mm-hmm. And so that was a hinkling of, you know, kind of turn us, and they said it would take 5 or 6 years for us to get a trial date, when actually it was only about a little over a year that we would have got a trial date. We were told that, too.
Who told you that?
Go ahead.
Who told you that?
We were told that by Mark Maron.
So do you think Mark Maron gave you wrong information? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, he gave us information that made us, that kind of turned us to signing a tentative settlement agreement on the second hearing that we had for the settlement agreement.
Did you talk to him about where he possibly got this and why he was, I mean, did you, where did you find out that this was a mistake, and who claimed that it could be done in a year rather than 5 or 6 years?
Well, what happened is Crystal, one of the lead plaintiffs, had asked Anthony for paperwork. She wanted a copy of all of her file paperwork in court.
Now, Anthony is Anthony Prince, the other attorney involved in this case?
That's correct. He's the one that passed the lead attorney to Mark Maron.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, she got her papers back. Well, lo and behold, in the paperwork that he had given her, there was a federal court hearing trial date scheduling, and we could have been scheduled within a little bit over a year to go to trial. And that's ultimately what we wanted to do, was go to trial. That was what we were there for. We didn't want to settle. We wanted to go for $2.5 million, just like the Kincaid one, and that's what we wanted to do. But since it was going to be so long, that really 80% is why we decided to go into the tentative settlement agreement. If we knew the truth, the year and a half, we would have never even talked. We'd have left that building, and we'd be in trial.
Now, was your purpose mainly the money, or was it the publicity, or was it both?
Well, it's probably both, to get it out there, to let them know that you can't be taking people's stuff like that. Just go in there and take it without no notices and not having a place for them to go. And this is for everybody in the United States of California.
Now, this Crystal, you're talking about Crystal Sanchez of Sacramento?
No, I'm talking about Crystal Motley. She's one of the lead plaintiffs there's 12 lead plaintiffs on the front of the lawsuit.
She's a Marysville person.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
So, the...
We have that documentation, and I never seen any documentation that said 5 or 6 years. We were just told that by the attorney.
So when were you given this $333,000? You went into court, and you agreed to that settlement because of what you felt was, we learned was misinformation. And then, was this a finalized settlement that with the court...
No, it wasn't. After the tentative agreement on February 3rd, what happened is they wrote up an agreement. Our attorneys and the county and the city of Marysville wrote up an agreement, a settlement agreement, in which we were coerced to sign. And what I mean by that is later on, about a month later, after February 3rd, none of us wanted to sign it, because the agreement was, it had said that we had participated in the settlement terms and the conditions, and we never even talked to anybody. We weren't with anybody under the terms and conditions. They did it all themselves, and it said that the attorneys were going to get $75,000 out of the money, and that they were going to be the ones to get the $30,000, which led it to about $105,000 out of the $330,000, which is 33% of the money. All of a sudden, and so we just did not want to agree. Well, we had a couple of meetings with Mark, one at Burger King in particular, where the lead plaintiffs are there, and Mark's there, and Mark is wanting us to sign. We're not wanting to sign because of the agreement. We just did not agree with even for the term where all the money, if it wasn't spent or passed out, would go to a nonprofit. We never agreed on that either. Well, Mark was saying, hitting his chest, saying, you know, I'm not making anything out of this. This $300,000 is yours. Your guys are going to be the ones to distribute it, and the $30,000 is going to be yours. That's for you. So we went ahead and signed that.
When did you sign that agreement?
What's that?
When did you sign the agreement that...
We signed the agreement, it was about, probably a couple months ago.
And so this...
Last time that we had signed it, when we had met with him.
And this was based on his verbal reassurances.
Yeah, on the promises of what we were going to get, even though the settlement agreement said that, we're figuring that Mark's going to do it in a way that we could just get the money. But that's not true, because I had a conversation with Mark just last week when I found out that they had mailed out a letter to one of the claimants after we had the claims process and determined who was valid, who wasn't. Well, he mailed out something to a deceased member's person that was going to receive the money and had put an amount on there how much a substantial claim was about. And we had standard and substantial amount. Well, the substantial was the biggest one, and it was $2,000 for a substantial claim, which we did not agree on that. So I did some figuring, and what it figured out was that they were taking 33%, and instead of the total amount of $330,000 that the money would be divided by, it was only $185,000.
So when you did you confront Mark Maron with this concern?
Yes, I did. He said he did not say that. He said he wouldn't say that, and he did not say that. He didn't know what I was talking about.
Did anyone record the conversation?
Well, it was in court.
I mean, is
all of these plaintiffs in that Burger King, there was seven or eight of us there, and it wasn't going to sign. And he doesn't have anybody to show, to say that he said he forgive. But I got a lot of witnesses that he said the same thing to.
But you have witnesses, but do you have a recording of his saying that?
No, I don't.
Huh.
I just have it in court when he said it, and I don't know exactly what he told the judge about the $30,000 when he came back into the office, about the $50,000 normally goes to an administrator, and he came and told us the $30,000. I have no idea what he told Judge Newman. I have no idea what they talked to, because we were left in the room while the attorneys all went out and talked, and then they came back. We were there for 8 hours. And so I don't know what he told the rest of the people. I don't know.
So who has the money right now? Is it in somebody's hands? Is it being held back from homeless people? Is it not yet resolved? What's the issue?
Okay, well, it's not
yet. Where is it?
What's happening is we just went and had a phone court with federal court magistrate on Monday, this last Monday, just about 3 days ago. And we had it here at the house on the rejection claims, the claims that were rejected. And there was two people that they never got the notices. They were mailed to our address, so they were returned. So the judge went ahead and has Mark and then mail out. There's four of them that are left. So as soon as we get these four rejected claims resolved, then that will be it, and there will be a final approval hearing with a fair hearing.
Now is that... what do you expect to come out of this? Do you expect to retrieve the original $333,000, or do you think that you will be forced to take a lesser settlement?
That's a question. I haven't really decided. I've written 3,000 words since Monday, and I think that in all fairness, even though it may not do any good, but I think just for the integrity of being able to tell them what we were told and why we signed these agreements on coercion, I think that the court needs to know this. And so what I plan on doing is I plan on filing a motion myself against my attorneys and the other attorneys to reconsider the terms and the conditions of the contract that we weren't even involved in, that they say we were, about the terms in there and what has happened, and let them know exactly what we were told, exactly what we expected, and it's nothing like that.
Have you had any meetings with the actual the plaintiffs, the named plaintiffs, and then perhaps the broader number of people in the class action suit, and seen what they want to do?
Yeah, they are. They're behind me 100%.
And you know this because you've had a mass meeting. I mean,
if we can stop the settlement agreement, we're willing to go to trial and take it for another year and go for the $2.5 million with the jury and judge and everything.
Now, have you had a mass meeting with folks? How did you come up with this conclusion?
Yeah, when we got them together, we stay in contact with at least 30 or 40 of them on a frequent basis. You know, they call us, we call them because of the claims process. Everybody calls us and wants to know what's going on. You know, we file the claims form and this and that. So, yeah, everybody is on board with what we're doing. Whatever decision that I make, they're on board with it.
And how many people ultimately does this impact one way or the other?
It would impact probably 100 people.
So we talked about this 4 or 5 months ago, and at that time you seemed to be telling me that you were happy with Mark Maron, the attorney, but not with the other attorney, Anthony Prince. Is that accurate?
That's accurate, yes, that's accurate.
What did, it sounds like that changed, and I'm a sort of, you know, skeptic of all attorneys, although, you know, Prince has been helpful in Seaside, tried to do stuff in Santa Cruz, suspended both of us from the organization. He's got some black marks too. But
100%. When I had a phone conversation with him last Thursday, I told him I believed in Mark. I trusted him with this. I believe 100%. And for him to tell me he never said these things is an outright lie. Period. I don't care what he. And so what I did do, I got to say. I called his wife because I didn't understand if it was a physical thing, if they were going through a problem, with his memory. I wanted to find this out because what he is telling me is that essentially the 3 or 4 terms that he had promised us were no good, and that he just outright just said, well, I didn't say those, and he can't get away with that. And the integrity of the case, I don't think that it's right for that to happen.
I guess the answer is you always want to get these things in writing that you think may be, you know, spoken but haven't been put down in paper, right?
Well, we've never signed any contingency fee. We never signed any agreement at all, even for the attorney to give the attorney the lead. We never signed any agreement. Nobody has.
So there's no agreement to do what he said, but there's no agreement that he would do what he said either, right?
Right, that's true.
So it's getting it on paper may be helpful. Of course, you know, there are twists and turns. But at what point did this, I mean, you and I have had long conversations because I've had some personal problems regarding attorney Anthony Prince, who, as I said to me, has a sort of a checkered record, both good and bad in many respects. But your position on, has your position changed with respect to what happened there? I mean,
I'll tell you what happened. I fired Anthony, and the class fired Anthony.
When was that?
We don't know why Anthony is even involved in getting any money from the class case because he was fired. Now,
when was he fired?
He was fired about a month after February 3rd.
And your reason for firing him was?
Was that nobody wanted, because he lied to everybody. He was telling that he would do, and he never did. And they just on the up and up on my case, combining with my case, because my case is that case. I had I'd already fired him from my case.
Here, now go ahead. So you were saying, you were explaining what the problem was with attorney Anthony Prince.
Yeah. So I fired Anthony from the class case. Everybody wanted to fire Anthony from the class. He told me I didn't have the authority to do it. The lead plaintiffs and the class gave me the authority to do this. So I fired him and told Mark Maron that he was fired. Well, Mark hadn't involved him any part after we had first distributed the claims back in, I think it was May. We first distributed claims. He had nothing to do with this. And now, all of a sudden, when I talked to Mark last week, he wasn't fired anymore, and that he was receiving, he'll probably wind up getting $40,000 out of this settlement, is what it looks like so far. And that wasn't agreeable at all. Well, now, that's the class case. Now, I had fired him previously before I had fired him from the class case, and what I did is I talked to Mark about it, and Mark suggested to me to go ahead and keep him. And if he doesn't do what I say, then sue him. So I took that advice. I rehired Anthony back on my case, and he seems to be doing okay. He did great on the motion for summary judgment, the opposition. He's doing what I'm telling him to do. As long as he's doing that, it's okay. Now, the problems before, they're still there. It's just the best way to go. So that's the way that I went. I took Mark Maron's advice about that.
And that was a recent court appearance, and Anthony did?
Yeah, it was on my case. We had opposition, and we had a hearing in the court here in Superior Court in Marysville. And the judge said he was tentatively going to rule for the city of Marysville on the summary judgment, but he'd been in there for 2 hours. And Anthony, by things that we had said and things we did, he said that he... Anthony kind of turned it around, and so he's going to take it under submission, which is where it's at now.
Well, good for Anthony and good for you. Congratulations on that. You originally said Anthony told you some things that weren't true that originally led you to fire him. Was that all resolved, or did you just simply sort of say, well, that's past history?
No, nothing's been resolved. Matter of fact, when we had our court hearing on Monday, Judge Newman mentioned to Anthony, because he was online, mentioned to Anthony that he is still open for the settlement of the Brown case. He mentioned that Monday, and then Anthony says, okay, because we still have a case with the federal court to go in there to settle, with the settlement. And he hasn't did nothing with that. He hasn't did anything with it.
Now, when you say the, it's a little confusing. I'm a little bit confused. I guess the issue for me is because Anthony has represented people here in Santa Cruz that I'm allied with, and then when he and you and he had a falling out, and he did stuff that you felt was inappropriate, or as you said, you claim he lied to you. I wanted more information about that. And as a consequence of that whole discussion, I was suspended from the Union of the Homeless here for allegedly, I guess, mentioning it to Mark Maron's partner, Kathleen.
Yes.
I was concerned also that he said any discussions of your case would be considered to be basis for suspending any hearing about this so-called suspension in my case and the suspension in your case. Now, this is all about an organization that really here in Santa Cruz is pretty sketchy. I mean, there's, of course, because of the COVID, it's probably sketchy everywhere. That's a real problem.
Yeah.
A lot of people have trouble meeting in person.
I will say, it is the same, Robert, here. It's kind of open to gain. It is real sketchy. The thing, he did talk to me about the union at the hearing that we had 3 weeks ago.
He being, you're talking about Anthony. You're talking about Anthony talked to you. Go ahead.
Yeah, Anthony, yeah. He said, Brian, he said, you are a leader. He says, all the stuff that has happened, he says, I'd like to put it all behind us, but he says, I'd like to offer you a position, that I would like to offer you my position as lead organizing council of California while I go national.
Uh-huh.
Is what he offered me. And I haven't got back to him on that because I'm not really concerned with the union right now. I'm concerned more with the lawsuits and the people is what I'm more concerned with.
Well, you also probably need, and I'm not saying you don't have some legal experience, you obviously have, but you need to have a lot of, not just legal experience, but all kinds of abilities to, turn out documents and so forth, which may be more difficult for you, no?
Yeah, well, I've been showing, just following, just doing what I'm doing and researching every time I get something, I research it to the max as best I can. And, for me not to have the experience in there, he wants me to be head of the legal team of California.
Uh-huh.
As far as me not having a license or anything, I can get him in. I can get him into court.
Well,
and once I get him into court, then, of course, attorneys can pick it up. But I can do the job of submitting things really well.
No, I'm just talking about, I'm not saying you can't. In fact, I'm assuming that was one of the reasons we got interested in Anthony in the first place here in Santa Cruz, or for me, when he came to one of our Huff meetings, was because he offered to train people in how to, so people can file their own lawsuits, which I think is really, an important tool, although a very difficult one for, I think, people who are outside to use, particularly during COVID-19 times, but
yeah.
Leaving all that aside. I guess my concern, though, is that the whole reorganization of the Union of the Homeless nationally seems to be pretty tightly controlled, if not by him, maybe by a coterie of people he's with, which does not involve a lot of free discussion, but rather involves a whole series of gag orders that happen if somebody crosses some line and is critical of some union policy or something.
Yeah, he he did mention something about that, about that they're changing their policies, and they're doing structuring it quite a bit different, which is the way that we should see it structured. You and I, you know, having it more liberal, more democratic, instead of more of a gag side. He did mention that also.
Well, I know at one point you stated you had. Even though, you know, you were saying you shouldn't be suspended or expelled from the union, which I think he said at one point you were, for, you know, for publicly talking about these differences of opinion with Attorney Prince. At that time, I think you were fine with Marin, but not so fine with what Prince had done. But also you decided to set up an independent union of the homeless that you said you affiliate with, you know, you're in solidarity with other California homeless union people, but you're not under the thumb of some national shut your mouth and lay low or else central leadership.
Yeah, we're definitely not that anymore. And, we still are continuing. We just been for the past 3 months. We've been distributing food to the homeless. Still, we've got 3-4 trucks that come here in our yard, and we've got it now where they're starting to come here every Friday, and we're staying in tune with them and giving them what they want. They're into COVID. The best we can do, but it seems to be working out pretty good.
I guess this situation, I'm not entirely disentangling all these cases yet and seeing them clearly, but things are pretty much regarding this most recent $333,000 settlement, which I think I mentioned on the net some time ago, a couple months back. It's still sort of there's some dispute as to who's getting the money. And whether people are going to come through. And remember, the verbal assurances you get on telephone calls don't necessarily mean diddly squat, unless you've got the documents signed and, I don't know, verified and all that kind of shit. And I don't speak from the knowledge of an attorney or even any kind of, you know, legal knowledge, but that just seems to me the common sense.
I did find out one thing legally during the settlement, since it's not recorded by a court recorder or anything, that attorneys can lie. They can lie to you. It's not legal. It's not ethical. It's not anything other than a lie, but the judge will not hear of it. He will take a verbal agreement over a signed agreement, but just as well as a signed agreement. So the verbal agreements that we've had with our attorneys, if he could know about those agreements, then it would be put in the light and he could determine something with that because he would believe that.
Yeah, but there would be different accounts as to what the verbal agreement said, right?
Yeah, because we were totally coerced on the reason that we signed it, because we never would have signed it if we knew it was going to come down to only $186,000 of total fund money being distributed to these class members.
And that was due to Mark Maron and not to Anthony Prince, you say?
That's correct.
But you had problems with Prince earlier that were similar?
Yeah, it was similar because what you know, I was telling Bruce, Raylan's brother, yesterday, that how can a system demand one man to give another man everything he has on the table uncovered and to solely trust him and trust him and lay him wide open to where I am so vulnerable, anything could damage me. And being a class of, like we are, we're damageable anyway. Well, I just don't understand that type of thing, you know, the trust issue there. With you could trust the lawyer, but you should be able to trust the lawyer also in the same sense to that fact. And I just don't understand that type of a law for one man to give another man that much trust.
Well, attorneys, it's not so much trust, it's they have power. And that's the reason that, you know, trust becomes an element, because they can say, we got the power. You don't want to trust us? Go fuck yourself. Find somebody else, you know. I think it's true. Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate, but it's true also with doctors, and it's true with these professional classes. They, you know, sometimes, I mean, they, you know, they do have some expertise. They do put in a lot of work training, and they do put in a lot of hours, I presume, although they also get a hell of a lot of privileges, too. So I want to see a society where they're actually, these are tools that ordinary people can use and don't have to go to these, you know, high priests to get, you know, the proper way to go.
And they don't have any recoil for something that they do. Now, us, on the other hand, we say something that was wrong or something on my memory or something, we get penalized. It doesn't seem like attorneys get penalized for misappropriation of information, or they seem to just go with what the attorney says. If it's a lie, if it's not, unless it's brought out to where in this particular situation, it's the main cause and the main reason why we signed this agreement was these lies.
Has there been any, I guess, to turn back to more substantive issues, though, I'm really still trying to work all this stuff out with, what Anthony said and did and what he's doing now, and ditto with Mark Maron. I thought Maron was a good guy in this situation. Sounds like, from your perspective, he hasn't been so good. I haven't talked to him about it. Or
I found out the truth. And then he just plays on, I did not say that. That's all he said. I did not say that. Why would I say that? He did in front of everybody.
So, the real issues for me have to do with what's happening on the ground. Are you getting much federal and local monies around homeless needs to deal with fires, smoke, heat, COVID?
No, nothing like that. Like from the Red Cross or anything, we're out there just trying to deal with what we can. We are getting totally left alone out there, and in the same sense, no help. They're not messing with us, but they're not helping us out any either. We're not getting any type of help at all. That's why this thing that we're doing here at the house is really, it's getting to be a bigger thing than I expected it to be, but there's no assistance to help these guys. They're, and it's real bad because they know they're in a lawsuit, but it's like, we're left wide open to their retaliation, I guess you could say, by cutting us off.
What things are you doing at the house? I'm missing a little of that when you say the things we're doing at the house.
We're distributing food. We get a couple of trucks here of food from the church, and we go and pick it up, and vegetables and everything, and we put it out in our front. We have a table, and we lay it out all in our front yard. And we've been putting out to almost somewhere around 80 people last week that are homeless people that come and get the food.
Is this like one day a week or every day?
Every Friday.
So it's once a week?
Yes.
So you get to eat once a week?
At least, we have plenty of stuff to where we're trying to back it up at the camps. And they're getting a pretty good stock at the camps. I mean, we keep getting it, even though we're not giving it out. Some of this stuff is preservable because it's in bags and boxes, so we just keep giving it out until we get a surplus of that on the camp, and it'll back up to the house.
What's the story?
To where there's food, we've got the food at the camps now, and there's a surplus there at the camps that they can survive on their own, and then we're still getting it at our house.
How many camps do you service?
Right now, there's you're talking 100 camps easy.
And how many people would you say you service?
250.
And have the camps become more visible in the last 6 months compared to, say, a year ago?
Yes. Traders and hitch traders and motorhomes is off the hook here.
And are they being harassed less, more, or about the same level as a year ago?
They're being harassed less, actually. Like I say, they're not really wanting to do anything to them, and they're not wanting to do anything for them.
So is that partially because of the CDC's shelter-in-place advisory and perhaps what happened with the Union of the Homeless in Sacramento, where I guess Prince and Maron were able to get a court order essentially dictating, although not apparently very effectively dictating, but somewhat dictating to Sacramento police and authorities to leave the camps alone and stop the sweeps. Is that, you think that that's had spillover effect to you, or what's the reason for the change?
I think it's a lawsuit.
Your own lawsuit?
Yeah, I think it's a lawsuit. The class action, and I think it's my lawsuit, because they're supposed to have like a stay-away order. They're not really supposed to do anything, why this is in litigation, why this is still here, and the Martin versus Boise, Idaho, where unless you have a place for us to go, just leave us be.
Mm-hmm. They aren't using pretexts like blocking the sidewalk, messing with vegetation, forest fire clearance needs, unhealthy needles, any of that still being used?
No, nothing like that came out. But what I will tell you is that Sutter County, right over the bridge from Yuba County. There's Yuba County on this side, and there's Sutter County. Steve Smith, he's the county administrator. I've been talking with him. Matter of fact, and he called the other day and said that they have now have an area that they cleared out for a tent city. So he's really doing a real fine job because he knows the law. He knows that he can't put these people out with no place to go. So he's at least trying to accommodate a place. And I was told yesterday they bulldozed the place, made it all nice and level and everything. So they're going to bring in some barrack-type tents for right now anyway. And they're going to clean up the street a little bit because on 2nd Street over there, there was a lot. It was real terrible because that's the only place for them to go. And then you couldn't do anything about it, but they were kind of filthy, just dirty garbage here everywhere. So now we cleaned that up, and he's made a spot now for them now, and we're going to bring in some barrack tents and everything for the Sutter County homeless.
So. Now, is this by Smith's account, or did you go over to Yuba and talk to actual activists and homeless people there and take a look at the situation yourself?
No, this is stuff by Steve. He just called me and told me the other day.
Yeah, well, watch out, you know. These administrators...
I got to keep it in reserve. Yeah, you're right. Because there
watch
is,
out.
There is, I got to tell you this, too. We were notified that by the state that there was two pieces of property in Sutter County that we can go to that would be our property. I don't know if Sacramento has it, but they had issued out places for the homeless to go that was state-owned, that wasn't city-owned. And they had pointed out two properties. Well, one of the properties, Ray Lynn and Alex Kritz, I think you're familiar with her, have a thing with little houses. It's the Eagle's Nest or the Nest. And so they've been working on trying to get these houses down here on one piece of the property. And these little tiny homes are really cool. They're Ecosavi homes. They're a really cool project. But that's what Ray Lynn and her partner, Alex Kritz, has got going on with the piece of property in Sutter County. So Steve doesn't have any problem with that at all. It seems like, you know, I'm more looking at it for the betterment that you said to watch out for him. Well, I'm trying to watch out for him, but, you know, the same sense, he's doing good, and I could say that compared to the people right across the bridge in Yuba County ain't doing nothing.
Well, I can give you an example of what's happening here in the sense that you have hundreds of tents, you know, all over the town. And what happened was there was an area in the Benchlands, the San Lorenzo Park, where 200 people were camping. And what the county did was it moved in, created their little containment camp, which had, I don't know, 50 to 75 tents. It was nicer. It had, you know, porta potties they actually cleaned. It had drinking water that was actually provided. You know, so it had, and it had, it was all fenced off, so you couldn't go in and out without going past the security system. Initially, they had a curfew. I think the curfew is gone now. But it was for a very select, a limited number of people. It was, you know, they had got all this money from the feds or the FEMA or the state, I don't know, to do this kind of stuff. And so they're also in a situation where they don't want to see, you know, tents up and down the streets. But the issue was also what they did was they drove everybody else away into further areas, and now they're running around destroying those camps without giving them alternate shelter. Although they say, you know, they'll give them little pieces of paper and say, well, you can get on the waiting list over here and you go over there. You're familiar with that kind of shit, I suspect. So when I hear about these little, you know, state-sponsored efforts, I get suspicious. Although, you know, in theory, it could be very good. And in practice, for a few people, it obviously is good. But you also have the situation we are concerned about down here of these group shelters, where in theory, you don't want people sharing all the space together who are, you know, in the middle of a time where there's an illness that has no symptoms a lot of the time, is very contagious, and is very dangerous to people who are vulnerable, you know, particularly people who are older who are vulnerable. So that being the case, what's the situation for the group shelters? Are people being shoveled into group shelters up in your neck of the woods or not?
Well, no, they're pretty much keeping their same spaces. They're really just staying where they're at. I don't know if that's part of what the counties are trying to keep to them, just to keep where they're at because of the COVID. That's the reason they may not be doing nothing. But they're themselves, they're staying to where they're at. They only come out a little bit of the time to get food or something, but they're pretty much staying to themselves and not being pushed around into one central area and then dispersed out to where they can just pick them off one at a time. No, none of that's not really happening here.
So there are groups of people who have formed communities, and those communities continue?
Yes, that's correct.
Because
that's
what's being destroyed here. That's why they go in and remove these. They essentially break up the communities of people, and they try to file people into their little governmental systems, which involve, you know, it can be a positive thing. There for a few, it may actually even mean housing, you know. But it's such a relative few, in spite of the fact that allowing some people access to motel rooms, but only a relatively small number compared to the total number of vulnerable homeless people here. So, are any people being provided motel rooms up where you are?
Well, not by help from the consortium or anything like that. The consortium has took a break for the past 2 or 3 months.
Consortium of Care you're talking about?
The consortium that care for help for the homeless.
Yeah, gotcha.
They haven't been together for a couple months. They took time off to restructure everything, but nothing's really coming by the way of that. But I talked to Steve, we have to go through the consortium to be able to get the money, because that's money that's going to the consortium to be able to get these people help. But there's no help for them. But what I do see, some of the people, matter of fact, I filed for 6, 7, probably 8 or 10 people have filed the PUA claim, the COVID. And I've got them their money, right? Well, I don't know how you guys are doing on that, but I see that there's a lot of people that could be picking this up, that could get this money, that could do something with it and get up the street. Now, if there was a place for them to go, now we're all full here, hotels, motels, you talk about it, we're full.
Mm-hmm.
So there would be no place for them to even spend this money to get housing.
Well, Santa Cruz, interesting enough, is a tourist town, so I don't think you are, you know. So that being the case, it's, you know, there's a lot more open. How is the closing of businesses or the shutting down of businesses? What kind of impact does that have on homeless folks who need access to, you know, to be able to go in and, you know, sit in coffee shops or, you know, be, you know, use relatively cheap services? Are they still available?
No, they've shut down everything, and the homeless are the only ones that are really taking it in stride, because they're used to this kind of treatment. But the people that you see sitting on the sidewalks out of the cafes, they're not used to this kind of treatment. They still see the homeless walk by and sitting right next to them now, where before they never were like that. So the homeless, they're taking that in stride.
How's the illness situation among homeless folks?
The illness, we haven't had anybody that we've known, and Raylan and I, they contact us 24 hours, so we haven't had anybody pass away from the COVID that's been homeless yet or contracted any COVID in any of the camps.
Does anybody who wants a COVID-19 test get to take one, or are you just people haven't been tested?
People just haven't been tested.
That's pretty much, I think, what's happened here, too. Well, listen, we've covered a lot of ground. I'm still, you know, unclear on a lot of things, but I think it's a beginning. Is there more you want to talk about that you think we haven't covered?
No, I just want to say, for Keith and for Alicia, you guys are doing a great job. You're doing a great job. It's just, I want to try to do the best I can for the people in California. And this lawsuit is only one lawsuit, but it's a big, big lawsuit. I've been working really hard, and I'm doing it for all the people. And this upcoming deal with what they're saying on the 330, for our integrity, just for the homeless people's integrity, I'm going to try to get them to come forth with telling us things that they can stick by. Because we're tired of being pushed around and lied to.
Well, again, I think I don't give a shit what they tell you. It's what they do that counts. And I guess what you got to do is get some kind of independent oversight from the courts to make sure that the attorneys, assuming that the account you're giving me is accurate and that you're remembering accurately, you know, is something that they have to do, not just, oh, yeah, well, you know, we thought we said that, but no, look, wait, we actually said this. You know, that's the sort of thing, which, you know, if attorneys have, because they have the power, they are prone to that kind of temptation, I think. So.
Well, when the advocates are advocates, you're a true advocate. You are a true advocate when you can do things like the Civil Liberties Union can do things pro bono, and you do it for the community is what pro bono means. You do it for the community. Well, when you have people in your family that are head of a SHOC organization, you expect those advocacy issues. You expect the perks of the advocacy, not to charge 33% out of a homeless suit money that these people certainly could use to get them somewhere and off the street.
It's not that it isn't outrageous, all these concerns you have. The question is, how can you make sure, if you can, that these issues are actually resolved in favor of the people who need the money and not those who are the upper middle class attorneys who are, doing some of the work, but who have agreed to do it for free. So I'm going to leave you with that. And we'll...
In writing, like you said, that's something that, it's hard to say. You get in there, you just at the very moment of the time, can I have that in writing? Well, you really, there's that trust issue again. You trust me, I trust you. What you say, I believe in you.
I got to say,
you were hit it right on the head. I didn't get anything in writing. I got more.
Get it in writing this time, and I will talk to you again about this, Brian, the next time we talk.
Okay. All right. Very good, Robert.
You good?
Thank you, man. Thank you, and I love what you're doing, and just keep doing what you're doing, and I'll keep you informed.
I appreciate it. Do let me know if something happened in the next week or two.
I surely will, because we do have as soon as my thing comes through the summary judgment, I'll give you a call and let you know what happens on that.
Thank you, man.
Okay. Have a good day.
You too.
Bye-bye. All right.